Welcome back in, hour number three of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it's that time of the week. We go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our good friend Corey Curtis from News 2. Corey, what's going on? How are we doing?
I am delightful this morning. How are you guys?
We are delightful as well. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning. Lots to get to with the Titans. I want to start, though, with A.J. Brown because, Corey, obviously you've seen A.J. Brown play a lot of football at this point. We saw how good he was last year, playing basically on two bad knees, and he has just been lighting it up at training camp so far. What have you noticed out of A.J. Brown, and how good of a sign is this if you're a Titans fan as to what he could potentially be this year if fully healthy?
Well, I mean, the first thing you notice, they can't cover him. I mean, he looks absolutely unbelievable. You know, is that A.J. Brown? Is it the secondary? You know, we're going to have to see. I tend to think it's more A.J. Brown who's just taking the next step in his development. You know, just the confidence is unbelievable. And, you know, it's always been the concern, you know, and it is with most guys. Can he stay healthy, especially with how physically he plays the game? That's what we have to wait and see.
So give me three guys right now, Corey, who have opened your eyes. Or, hey, it can be four, it can be seven. Names that come to mind when I say some, you know, people who are opening your eyes on that field so far.
Well, you know, I every time I see Elijah Molden, I really like him. You know, I just think he plays fast. I think he's got great feet. I think he's got good instincts. I think he's prepared. And so I really like what I see from Elijah Molden. I've liked what I've seen from Marcus Johnson. And, you know, we had Teron on the show last night, and he talked a lot about Chester Rogers as well. So I think, you know, that position group in particular, you know, has looked good. But I've liked those two guys. And, listen, they're limited in what they're going to be able to give this football team because you're not putting them on the field over Julio and AJ. I mean, That's why you kind of got to temper your excitement when you see those guys. But, you know, I think I've never thought I would say wide receivers the most competitive position on the team. But right now it's right there with the defensive backs. It's really, really competitive, and that's good to see. So that's opened my eyes. You know, and then on the opposite side, you know, I went to practice on Thursday last week, and I saw Kaiser with the twos, and I just thought he struggled. So he opened my eyes on the negative side because I thought he could really push Logan Woodside for that number two job, and maybe he still will. Maybe he'll get it rolling, but I just don't think he's had a great start to camp.
Corey, obviously some moves made at the tight end position as well. Luke Stocker coming in, and then a really tough-looking injury for Briley Moore as well. But with Stocker now in the fold, Jeff Swaim in the fold as well, and Ferkser, do you anticipate that that's it for the Titans and they're done and no other moves are going to be made on that front? Or do you think John Robinson could maybe still have his eye out there to add to the tight end position?
Well, I don't think we can say they're done. You know, because I think as camp goes on, you kind of see what you've got and you see what you're missing, maybe more than anything. And I was talking with Emily Proud. We were looking at who was available at tight end, and I saw Stocker, and I said, he could help this team because, you know, they don't have that big, mashing tight end. And they went out and got him. And I think that signing makes a lot of sense when you see what was behind the two guys that they've got back. But, you know, if there's a guy who helps them elevate that position, like if the price for Zach Ertz comes way down or something, then maybe you could see it. I look, with John Robinson, he never stops tinkering, so I won't ever say that he's going to stop making moves. I don't think that that's the Titans' deepest position right now. I don't think that's outlandish to say. So no, I don't think, you know, they might be done, but there's no way I would say that they're absolutely done.
Does the way Ferkser looks, does that change the way you feel about that at all. I will say that I have been swayed a bit. I've kind of all along been like, is Firkser really a number one tight end? I will say, with all the caveats of, you know, where we are in camp and all that stuff, he looks like one to me right now.
Well, he looks good, and I think it's okay to be, you know, hopeful about him. But, you know, I think we have to slow our roll on he's the next big thing, he's the next, you know, the next guy after Kittle and those guys, because he hasn't shown that ever. He's shown he can get open to catch the football. He's shown he can play in this league. And, you know, look, do I think he can catch 40 to 60 passes for this team? Yeah. Yeah, I do. But can he be a playmaker like Delaney and Janu were? I don't know. He doesn't necessarily have to be because of the other guys that are on the offense. If he can play between the hashes and if he can find space and move the chains, he can really help this team. So I think he can be a good player, but I think, you know, we have to, at least for me, I'm kind of tempering my expectations because Hopium can really, you know, run on tilt this time of the year. You know, this happens every year with guys. Some guys live up to it, some guys don't. Listen, Anthony Firkser is their number one. I think he will be their number one. I don't know what his impact exactly will be, but like I said, I look at him as a guy who can catch 40 to 60 balls for him and move the chains.
Corey Curtis from News 2 on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Corey, you're aware of this. I mean, early on in the history of the Titans when they moved to Nashville, you didn't really have to worry about kicker all that much. They were pretty set at that position for a long time. Yeah. And we've talked a whole lot about the kicking position in the last couple of years. Another move made over the weekend. Hallbill is out. Ficken coming in from the Jets. Joe and I still believe at some point Gostkowski is going to end up here, and he's going to end up being the kicker for the Titans. Yeah. But at what point, if you're John Robinson and Mike Vrabel, do you have to find an answer to this? Because you can't keep doing this every year, right, where you keep trying to identify a kicker at some point during camp. This has become a pretty consistent problem for this team.
I joke that after they signed Stocker, it was because they were just going to hand him the ball and go for two every time.
Ooh, nice. I love that.
Because, you know, listen, they've got a plan, and I don't think they take anything lightly. But when you look at the last 2 years, unless their plan is to just bring in Gostkowski at the last second each year, it doesn't look like they've taken it that position all that seriously, right? I mean, I've said this with Carson Wentz in Indianapolis. I think Chris Ballard has a massive fail there because you can take a chance on Carson Wentz, that's fine, but you have to have a viable backup if you're going to do that. And if you're the Titans and you want Tucker McCann to win this job, that's fine. That's fine. You had him all of last year. You've got a pretty good idea of what he is and what you think he can be. But he hasn't done it, and you still have to have a viable guy who can come in and do it. And Blake Hallbill obviously wasn't that, and they had him all summer, okay? And, you know, we kind of went through this last year, and then Gostkowski waltzes in at the last second. I don't know how anybody feels about Tucker McCann at this point. You know, I think we all felt he was more talented or more prepared than Hallbill, but, you know, if you've got to win a playoff game, how do you feel with Tucker McCann doing the kicking at this point? I think it's a little scary. And so, you know, Vrabel talked about Gostkowski. He didn't dismiss it, which is something I think he would normally do. So I think everybody feels that way right now. And it's hard to take the kicking game seriously at this point when you feel like the opening day kicker isn't on the roster, and I don't think Sam Ficken's the answer. 72.9% career field goal percentage. That was good enough in 1977, but I don't think it's good enough now.
He was 13 for 15 last season, I will point out. I'll also point out that the Jets just cut him for like a basically unknown kicker,
yes,
so that's
yes.
Probably not a great sign here.
Endorsement.
Yeah, that's, we were talking about this earlier, Corey. It's like, I mean, obviously you're trying to, you know, find a long-term answer. You can't go to the Gostkowski well over and over, but at some point, I'm trying to imagine John Robinson like spending a third round pick on a kicker or something. You know, I'm struggling to wrap my head around that.
You know, you can do it in free agency. You can't go out and bring a guy in to compete, and you hope that McCann beats him out. I mean, and I guess you could say Sam Ficken is that guy now, but I kind of liken Sam Ficken to, you know, saying, you know, you like Rittich to play in goal over UC Saros, okay? I mean, that's just not ideally what you want to do. And I'd like a little bit more serious competition. And maybe in their minds it is, and I'm just dead wrong. But when you see the way they have attacked other positions, you know, like outside linebacker and quarterback and, you know, some of these spots to bring in people, because you obviously see the value that they have at them, and then the way they've handled this position, it just kind of makes you go, okay, see how we do.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that. Corey Curtis from News 2, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show, joins us every Monday at 8 o'clock. Corey, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Thank you, fellas. Hope you guys have a good day. We'll see you out of camp this week.
Absolutely. Sounds good. Corey Kurtz from News 2 here with us every week on Robbie and Rex Show. We'll come back. We'll react a little bit to what Corey had to say there. Also, got some of your thoughts to get to on our text line as well, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. This Wednesday, it's your chance to participate in the Nashville SC Pick-to-Click, brought to you by Camarena Tequila. If you guess correctly which player scores a goal in the game this Wednesday, you win a prize pack and a four-pack of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Participate this Wednesday morning at 9:45. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming live on Periscope, on YouTube, and on Twitch as well. Talking Titans. Taking your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Ron texting in, I just don't want another kicking carousel for the next couple of years. How many kickers is that now? Seven or eight kickers in the last 2 years? It has been a constant theme of rotating through some kickers. Now,
Santos, Sloman.
Guskowski was there for the most part last year, and then you just had Sloman come in and close things out.
But if you go a couple of years, you got Suckup, got
Santos,
Double Doink.
Yep.
What the heck is Double Doink?
Cody Park.
Cody Parkey. I'm sorry.
He got Double Doink coming in there.
I'm sorry, Cody.
Who, by the way, kicked very well last year.
Yeah. Well, Santos and Parkey move on. They're just fantastic. So
Suckup wins a Super Bowl.
Blake Hobble, he could figure it out, and he could be someone's 10-year outstanding kicker. It's possible. I mean, it really is possible. He didn't look good here. They also, you know, the Titans, of course, hired a kicking coach. That's something that Vrabel sort of revealed last week. James Wilhoit.
Hendersonville High School legend, James Wilhoit.
VFL.
Yep.
Guy who, so apparently what, he like tweeted at the Titans last year, like, you guys need to hire a kicking coach? And they're like,
okay.
My DMs are open. Slide into the DMs. And now he's the kicking coach. Didn't help Blake Hobble.
No.
But they've got a kicking coach.
I remember as a fifth grader, I waltzed into Hendersonville High School to watch a football game, and James Wilhoit was kicking. He nailed about a 58-yarder, and I was like, what's going on here?
Wow.
They can kick field goals in high school? How about that?
There you go.
Pretty good.
Nice. So maybe Will Hoyt will make a difference for Tucker McCann?
Yeah.
I mean, Tucker McCann is – I look forward to seeing him on a field in a game, you know, which he's never had an opportunity to do.
Yeah.
He will have that opportunity, I assume. I mean, they've invested and they've stuck with him this long. And I agree with Corey. It's like Ficken comes in, had a pretty good year last year, but again, the Jets cutting him right now. His availability makes me dubious, but he's going to come in, and I assume those will be the two guys when they go to Atlanta a week from Friday. But then again, from Friday is a long way away.
Especially at that position. Let's go back to the text line. Logan texting in. How would y'all feel if Sam Sloman kicks the game winner against the Titans this year?
Is he the Steelers' starter?
I don't know. I know he's with the Steelers.
He's not their
I don't know that he's their main guy. Yeah. Let's see if I can figure that out.
It's not coming to mind right now who their kicker is, but I assume he's just brought into if not, imagine that. Then if not, then we all know he's going to be amazing.
Yes.
As the Steelers' kicker.
Yes.
He's going to be dominant.
They have Boswell on the roster.
Yeah, okay.
Chris Boswell.
There you go.
He's entering the second to last year of his contract, so it doesn't look like Sloman's going to be the main guy.
Yeah, Sloman's a journeyman.
Titans legend, though. He'll always always have his moment.
He'll always,
In all seriousness, though, like to Corey's point, I don't know that I would go as far as to say like they just don't think kicking matters, because obviously it does, and we've seen it. Like, kicking can totally derail your season. Just ask the Minnesota Vikings a couple years ago. It can totally derail your season. So we know that. But it is interesting that this has been a consistent theme, a consistent conversation for the last 3 years. Obviously, I mean, we talked about 2019 a lot. It was awful. First half of last year with Gostkowski was not very good, with some good moments mixed in there, and then he got better coming down the stretch. And here we are again in training camp. And kickers have struggled so far, and you've had to make some moves, and now Ficken has come in. We just assume, like, I'm assuming Gostkowski is going to end up being the guy, but what if he's not? What do you do at that point? Because I don't know how you could feel good about really either option at this point between Ficken and McCann.
Do you hope Tucker McCann proves that your investment was wise, and that once he gets into the actual pressure of NFL games that he finds consistency? I don't think he's demonstrated enough in those little five-kick sessions. Sometimes I guess they went to six the other day. They did one. They tacked one on. That's what we see. And that's pressure. Everyone stops. He knows everybody's watching. It's not really a full rush. It's not pressure that, to me, rises to the level of what you face in a real game. And he just hasn't been consistent.
Yeah.
He's been good enough, obviously, for them to feel like he could be the guy. He has at times some just beautiful booming, kicks.
Yeah,
50 plus. I mean, he's got talent, but it's very hard to find people who can consistently do that job. And I just right now, what we've seen of him, I don't think that he's that guy. So, yeah, Gostkowski is still my prediction.
Titans make a move over the weekend as well. Luke Stocker coming into the fold to add to the tight end position. Obviously a guy that they're familiar with. Was there in Vrabel's first year with Matt LaFleur as the offensive coordinator. Stocker back in the fold here with the Titans. Briley Moore getting carted off the field on Saturday over the weekend, and he's placed on injured reserve. So Briley Moore is now out. Luke Stocker in the mix now at tight end. What do you think of that addition? What do you think of Stocker's chances of hanging around on the roster? And is J-Rob done? Is the tight end position now set in terms of, that's it, no more moves are going to be made, and this is what the Titans are rolling with at tight end? What did you think of the Stocker acquisition?
I like the ad because, as Todd Downing said, he's plug and play. He knows the system. He's 33. He's definitely a physical presence. I mean, when he was here, thought he was effective in that role. Not as much so as a ball carrier, but effective in that role.
In fairness, he only got one shot at it.
That's true. Now, wait a minute. Are you sure? Did he not get one other? For whatever reason, I feel like I remember being in a locker room laughing with him about that play because he had some other – maybe it was just like a catch he made or something. I don't know. But I remember after that game in Houston –
oh, he's got one career carry.
Okay, so it wasn't another
for
carry.
0 yards. Well, that was it, buddy.
Well, also, like, after the game in Houston, I remember, we were all around him, and it was like, have you ever carried the ball? And
in
I think
your
he's,
life?
I think he said something like, like middle school was the last time or something like that. But regardless, I do like the signing of Luke Stocker. I agree with Corey that you could still see someone shake loose, and John Robinson will certainly be ready. It's not like this position is like, oh, you are all good. But I think I feel better about them at tight end with Stocker in and with the way Ferkser has played and has looked out there than I did going into camp. It also stinks. It stinks more for Briley Moore because I think if he made the team, you know, he was going to be a guy who helped in maybe in the kicking game some, but wasn't going to see the field a whole lot unless there were injuries. But I do like him. He's a nice prospect. I think he was a really nice pickup on the undrafted free agent market, and that was just a brutal injury to watch the other day.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Got a texture that says, what does a solid kicker cost in the trade market? You don't see a whole lot of trades for kickers. The problem with that is, like, if a team's got a good kicker,
yeah, they're not letting them go.
They're not letting them go.
Right. Yeah, that, I mean, it's and if I mean, how many teams have two? How many teams have a backup kicker that someone would want to trade for? I imagine
maybe
it's happened
any
here and there, but yeah, for the most part, those guys just sort of get kind of moved around and recycled around, and you're not trading assets because, again, you can pick up a Sam Ficken, you know, and give him a shot. And sometimes someone who's been inconsistent for a while at that position figures it out and finds whatever it is that you find. It's such a mental position, obviously. It's such a routine position, getting those muscles to do the exact same thing every time. Very few humans can do that. And sometimes people figure it out, but usually you have a pretty decent idea. Obviously, the Titans feel like with Tucker McCann that there is potential for him to become a consistent kicker. I just haven't seen it yet.
At Gators_Z on Twitch, when Caleb Farley is able to practice, what are you looking for to see that he's back? I would say, number one, just watching him run. Like, can he run with these guys?
Well, change of direction.
Yeah.
You know, to me, I think TD put it well not long after the draft. You know, you can have, like, still your straight line speed and everything like that, but the twitchiness, you know, the ability, if you're a high-level twitchy athlete, to change directions and be explosive quickly one way after going the other way. I mean, you have to have that as a cornerback in the NFL. You know, the hips, all that. You have to be so fluid to be effective. So, I mean, I'm just looking for just, you know, how is he explosive still? I will say again, Farley just walking around type thing. I mean, he looks good. He's certainly been around the facility working out and things like that. No idea when they might put him out there. Like, will they be comfortable if he's cleared? Will they be comfortable putting him in preseason games and having contact and making tackles? I mean, you draft him in the first round to cover people and tackle them.
Yeah.
Vrabel's not a big preseason player main guy, especially, you know, first round pick who's coming off what he's coming off. So,
I mean, the first preseason game's a week from Friday. Like, he's not on pretty soon. I mean, you can just rule that out at this point.
Yeah, right. I mean, yeah. No, I would not. That one long shot. Then they're at Tampa. Then they're the one preseason game here is against the Bears. But what I'm looking for, yeah, is just 100%. That is, yeah, should be a big, big day for football in the world. Just looking for him, the change of direction, you know, I think he's probably can go out right now and run as fast as he has run, but the back stuff, you know, in football, you just have so much stress on your back in doing various things. Can he handle that?
Yeah. It's going to be a big question for Caleb Farley when he's able to come back this year, and we'll see at what point he's back on the field for training camp coming up here. Still a long way to go in Titans training camp here through the next few weeks. When we come back, we'll be joined by Stephen Holder from The Athletic, who covers the Indianapolis Colts. We'll get into the Carson Wentz injury situation with him coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing the AFC South and the Indianapolis Colts. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in friend of the show, Stephen Holder from The Athletic, who does a great job covering the Colts for The Athletic. Stephen, what's going on, man? How we doing?
I don't know. I'm just here looking for a quarterback. I don't know.
just trying to find one of those out there.
Me know if we got any leads. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see if we can find one for you.
I do have some ideas. We'll get to that.
We will get to that coming up here in just a few minutes. So, Stephen, let's start there. Obviously, the news of Carson Wentz and his foot injury, trying to hold off surgery. What's kind of the latest on that front, and what's the concern level right now in Indianapolis with Carson Wentz already injured, basically two practices into camp?
Well, today's a big day. I'm hoping that we get some clarity, because I think there's just been so much, reported and speculated. And that, unfortunately, that's really what we're dealing with right now, is speculation. I can tell you this. No one in the building, no one, has even suggested it's season ending. So I don't think that's what we're dealing with. I think we're dealing with an injury that will have him out for some length of time. The question is, and it's been fluid, the question is how much time and what is the course of action? You know, I think it's from every indication, you know, surgery has been talked about, but I don't think that has been settled on. So they got to figure out what's the next course of action. And you can imagine that Carson Wentz, he wants to get back out there as soon as possible. Look, he knows what people think about him. He knows what's been said about him. He knows what his reputation is among some. So there's a lot of motivation on his part to get out there, but they got to do what's smart. Look, it's August 2nd, okay? And in the grand scheme, that has to, I think, be the driving force here. The fact that on some level, time is on their side, and I think they need to act with that in mind.
But if there is, if surgery is required, I would presume that's season ending. Or is
no,
that not, not necessarily true? Okay.
No,
okay.
No, not true. So I don't. So that's the good thing. I don't think this is at least not according to anything I've been told. And they have not. It was indicated to me this is not a worst case scenario situation. And you know, worst case being season ending. They think this is going to be a situation where he can come back early in the season if it had to be. And I don't even know if it's that long. I mean, the timeline is not something that they've really speculated about. So I'm not going to speculate. But I do know they certainly don't feel like this is a thing where this is going to upend their entire season. Now, it could affect their season, but I don't think there's a difference between that and saying this, you know, sort of puts a bullet in their season. That's not how they're seeing this. Even I think if it's on the end of the spectrum, that is a longer absence versus in the shorter, it's still not, from their understanding, a season-ending injury, if that makes sense.
If it is that, do you think that they should still be out in the market to try to get someone?
I think if he's going to miss games, you know, and we're talking probably, if we're talking multiple games potentially, and again, you know, a lot of this is speculative because we do still do have 5 weeks, but if he's going to miss games potentially, I think they have to consider all options. Here's the thing. They've got a murderer's row coming out of the gate. You know, they got Seattle, they got the Rams in week two. I believe it's Tennessee after that. So I mean, they've got Miami, they've got Baltimore in there. I mean, it's rough. So that first five games, look, I didn't anticipate them being better than 3-2 in those first five games, just because that's the meat of their schedule. Now you throw in a quarterback injury, and now you're in trouble. So they've got to figure out a way to at least tread water, I think, in those first five games. And look, as you mentioned, we're only a week in, not even a week in, so we don't know everything about what we're seeing out here. They're not even in pads until this morning when they get going here. But what I can tell you is what I have seen of Jacob Eason, their number two quarterback, is definitely cause for concern. And he's really not a guy expected to be ready. I mean, he's a rookie who didn't ever see the field last year, not even as so much as the scout team. So, you know, they had two veteran quarterbacks in here, Philip Rivers, Jacoby Brissett. Basically, he took a redshirt year, and now here the guy is sitting here at the number one quarterback spot with the first team offense in the middle of training camp. I mean, is he ready? No, he's not ready. So I don't think there's anything to be ashamed of there. The question is, can he go from where he is now to ready to play opening day if necessary? And I think that is a tough road to climb.
Stephen Holder from The Athletic on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, Stephen, early on in training camp, what have been your observations so far with the Colts? And I want to ask you specifically about Jonathan Taylor. Came on very strong at the end of last year. What are your thoughts on him as he heads now into year two with Indian in this offense?
Well, I'll expand that to the running game generally. I think Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack, who is back, and the reason I throw Marlon Mack in there is because I had sort of measured expectations for Marlon Mack coming into this, but and then we'll see, you know, when they get out there and actually play regular season games at full speed and all that. It's hard to tell with running backs sometimes, right, in the preseason training camp.
Right.
But he hasn't had any limitations, and that's a very good sign. So now you throw in there Jonathan Taylor and the experience that he gained last year. I think one of the biggest things for Jonathan last year, honestly, was confidence. I mean, I think if you watched him early in the season, he was running very timid. He was not a confident runner. And then I think it's like he had an epiphany, like, oh, wait a minute, I'm 225 pounds and I can run 4.3. What am I doing? To which I would say, thank you. Because, I mean, it was really frustrating to watch him at times early in the season, knowing that, okay, look, that's as much of a hole as you're going to get, kid. And, you know, I think sometimes that transition from college to the pros, I mean, look, he played at Wisconsin, right? That's, you know, offensive line you. Can you imagine some of the holes he ran through? Well, those don't exist in the NFL, even with the Colts offensive line. So I think he just had to understand that he had to trust his vision, and if he saw it, know that he was talented enough to make use of, you know, what creases he was seeing and holes he was seeing. And once he did that, I really think the talent took over. He went from being too mental to allowing his talent, I think, to lead him. And really, running back is an instinctive position. It's really just a position where ability is what matters more than anything, I think. And he has that. Once he figured that out, you know, I think he was a different player. So, look, is he going to run for 700 yards in, you know, every 3 or 4 games like he did at the end of last season? I don't know about that, but he definitely has the big play potential. And I think that is going to be, if Carson Wentz comes back, I think the big play potential at running back coupled with Carson's, you know, big play mentality, I think there's some potential there.
Yeah, Rutgers and Northwestern don't quite give you the look when you got that offensive line in front of you. But no, he looks great. Mac, I just think Mac is such an underrated player in this league. You have to like him there. What about the other side of the ball, Stephen? What are you seeing from the defense? Is this defense, can it be better this year?
So it's not completely intact right now. There's a few guys on the COVID list, shocker. And then there are, Darius Leonard hasn't practiced yet because he's coming back from off-season surgery, relatively minor surgery on the ankle. They just kind of had some discomfort going on there. So he'll be back out there in time, and this defense will look different. Certainly Xavier Rhodes has been on the COVID list, the top corner. So they're not all out there, but I will tell you this, they've been really opportunistic. And a guy who, you know, Titans fans are probably somewhat familiar with, but you're going to hear his name more, is middle linebacker Bobby Okereke. He has been, I think, one of the standouts of this camp. And I've always liked him as a player in terms of his ability to be really physical and to be a playmaker. But what he's doing this camp is he's getting his hand on the football a lot. And he gets in those passing lanes. And I really think he can be an above average or very upper level coverage linebacker in this league. I think he's got that kind of ability. And I know he has ability at the line of scrimmage. So he is, I think, the guy who has a chance to really break out. You know, Anthony Walker left in free agency for the Cleveland Browns. So that is all Bobby Okereke's spot right now. And really his emergence prompted them to be able to allow the veteran Anthony Walker to walk away. So that should tell you the kind of confidence they have in him. I don't think it's misplaced at all. I think that kid has got star potential. And then you've got the other thing I would say is up front on defense. Look, they've got to get some pass rush going from the edge. But what they have going on at defensive tackle, I think, has a chance to be special. You saw those guys, I thought, you saw a couple games last year, but one without DeForest Buckner. But when he did play in that first game, I think, you know, we all saw against Tennessee, you know, the kind of impact that defensive line could have. And then Grover Stewart comes back. They've added a guy like Antoine Woods as a depth player from the Cowboys. So they've got a lot going on in that interior of the defensive line. I think they're going to be really hard to run against, and I actually can't wait to see him against Derrick Henry. I think that's going to be a great matchup, as it tends to be.
Okay, two things to finish, Stephen. One, you referred to the vaccinations. Have the Colts also sort of responded positively? It seems like the whole league has, but to the NFL essentially, you know, making it very clear that it's going to be a problem if you don't get vaccinated. How has the response been? And then, a little hypothetical for you, if you were out and you're the Colts out looking at, you know, maybe a realistically tradable quarterback, who would you prefer, Marcus Mariota or Gardner Minshew? There's a lot in that question for you there.
Yes, there is.
So let's take the easy one, I guess, vaccinations. So they are still – look. All right, let me answer it this way. I think they definitely have in recent weeks, and I'm talking coming into camp, they definitely had some response. I mean, I think what the NFL put out was pretty obvious. It was pretty obvious where this was going, and I think players saw the handwriting on the wall. However, I don't think they got the kind of response that we saw with other teams. They're still damn near the bottom in terms of vaccination rate. They got to do better. They've got about 60% or a little over 60% of these guys have at least one dose of the vaccine. But remember, the NFL, to be fully vaccinated, you've got to have two shots, or, you know, at least fully vaccinated plus 2 weeks. That's what's considered fully vaccinated. So they're a long way from getting, you know, a majority of their guys in that category. And I got to tell you, I mean, there are some really key players who, from all intents, or from all appearances, I should say, are unvaccinated on this team. You know, we don't know if Carson Wentz is vaccinated, for example, right? And that's his choice. That's fine. I'm just talking about the football implications, right? So I think there are some big vaccination questions with the Colts, big time. I think that's going to be an issue. They had three guys go on the COVID list on day one. They've got four now. So not good there. And the quarterback question, Mariota or Gardner Minshew, I got to tell you, I think Minshew is interesting. I like Mariota.
Yes.
I like Mariota in terms of what he could do within the framework of a Frank Reich offense, because I think he's really creative as a play caller, and I think he could put Mariota in some good spots. However, Minshew is a guy who I think if you put him on a team with weapons, and they have some weapons, I think he's a guy who can distribute the ball and actually make good decisions and get you where you need to go. I mean, look, I wouldn't necessarily predict him to win a Lombardi or anything, but I think you could get him in there and just not screw it up. And I think he'd actually give you what you need. They have enough weapons on this team. They don't have a Julio, okay? Let's be honest. They don't have that type of player in their skill positions. But what they do have is a lot of good players. And they have some depth at both running back, receiver, and tight end. They've got good depth at all those spots. When you're the quarterback, I think if you've got to fill in for Carson Wentz, your job is don't screw it up, in my opinion. So I think Gardner Minshew is a guy who could do that. I think with Marcus, what you get is, you know, a little bit boom or bust. I think you get a little more consistency from Minshew. And just hopefully if you had to go with Mariota, hopefully it's more boom than bust, but you guys know about that.
Oh, yes.
Yes, we do.
We only spend a few – how many years talking about that in this town every day? Yeah.
Long time.
Right. That's the problem, though, with players like that. It's like, you know, I need to know what I'm going to get. And I think that's a hard thing for coaches, right? You know, not knowing. And that's sometimes the issue with Marcus. What am I going to get? And is it going to be consistent enough? And that's not a good question to be asking about your quarterback.
Stephen Holder, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show, does a great job covering the Indianapolis Colts for The Athletic. Stephen, great stuff, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us this morning.
Hey, guys, anytime.
Absolutely. Stephen Holder does a great job for The Athletic covering the Colts. We'll respond a little bit to what he had to say on that front coming up next. Got some of your thoughts to get to as well on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. .5 The Game is bringing you Nashville's best coverage of Titans training camp, presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans, Frontier Basement Systems, the All Things Basemently Company, the Trenches Shop in North Nashville, and the Cut Truck Mobile, Nashville's newest barbershop on wheels. You have control of the time and place. Book your appointment at thecuttruckmobile.org. And Joe, Speaking of Titans training camp, some news on that front. The Titans have activated first-round pick Caleb Farley from the team's non-football injury list. So it looks like Caleb Farley is ready to go and will be out there to practice today for the Tennessee Titans.
Here we go.
We talked about Caleb Farley earlier in the show.
Looks like
he's going to be out there.
And talked about last week in very general terms. I said I would be optimistic if I were you as a Titans fan, wondering if he will be available at any point. And here we go. I wasn't sure, you know, if it was going to be this fast. But now you talk about that preseason game. Well, he'll have been on the field quite a bit for that. So
yeah,
all eyes will be on Farley today. The second Farley. Remember, Matias Farley also on this team.
Yes, that is for sure. Tyson Brilo activated as well off of PUP. Jeremy McNichols activated as well. So two more players that Titans fans are familiar with activated and should be back on the practice field, at least are eligible to be back on the practice field today. Interested to see how active Caleb Farley is today. I can't imagine he's going to be doing too much today in his first day back on the field, but as you said, be a lot of attention on the first round pick today at Titans training camp, which practice begins right around 9:30.
Yeah, now certainly Farley could still, I mean, he's activated and he could still just do like the DB drills and not do team. Like
yep.
I would kind of expect that he wouldn't be thrown right into team.
Right.
Will he do 7-on-7? You know, my guess would be no, but who knows? We'll see. I guess if you're activated, you're activated, and it's trying to get a guy ready who you hope will help you this year. Increases the competition at cornerback and makes it really interesting if he's able to fully join the fray, how they will move guys around and what that looks like with, I mean, Fulton and Jenkins have been right there on the outside, you know, the whole time. I would say right now, Molden trying to work his way up, and, you know, we'll see where Farley fits in there.
Going to have Gentry Estes from the Tennessean join us to begin the 9 o'clock hour. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the Kumar Rocker situation as well coming up to begin the 9 o'clock hour. Stephen Holder throwing it out there that it doesn't seem like there's a ton of concern inside the building for the Colts that Carson Wentz's injury is going to be season-ending. They've called it in reports cautiously optimistic. Obviously, Carson Wentz sustained a foot injury on Friday, only made it through a couple of days of Colts practice, has not yet at this time opted for surgery, trying to avoid that and to try to rest and rehab and be ready for week one. Surgery is still an option that's on the table if that does not go well for Carson Wentz. But either way, at this point, if you're a Colts fan or if you're Chris Ballard, how, I guess, concerning would this be at this point? And as Corey brought up earlier, it is kind of amazing that you're bringing in a guy like Carson Wentz, who albeit is talented, and we've seen flashes of really high-level quarterback play. We've also seen him look pretty bad at times as well. But he's been very up and down, and injuries have been the story with him a lot. It is kind of amazing that that's been the case and that the response by Chris Ballard has basically been, yeah, Jacob Eason's our backup quarterback. Like, it feels like you should have a more established guy there ready and waiting in the wings that can play and play meaningful snaps.
I agree. Real quick Olympic break. Japan just beat the United States in baseball.
On a walk-off.
Tough day.
Yeah.
For the United States. The women's national team in soccer loses to Canada in a shootout. Now the baseball team blew it in the ninth inning, right?
Yeah.
And this loss to Japan.
They did.
Back to the Colts.
Mike Socha is the manager, so saw that one coming. Anyway, continue.
Is that right? I didn't realize
yes.
That. Yeah, I feel like this is some fair criticism of Ballard to not be more prepared when you take a guy like that. And I understand the gamble with Wentz for sure. I get it. I think that if you can get him back healthy and with this supporting cast, you could have something. But you also have to realize his injury history and be a little bit more prepared than Jacob Eason and Sam Ellinger and company. So, but that was interesting from Steven, that even with surgery, they don't anticipate this being season-ending. Now, it may be division title chase-ending,
I was about
if
to
that's
say.
The case.
If he's having surgery and he's going to miss whatever it would be, but he brought up the schedule. Like, if you've got even if Carson Wentz is the quarterback, that's a tough schedule. If you've got Brett Hundley or Jacob Eason as your quarterback for the first 5 weeks and you're rolling through Seattle and the Rams and the Titans, that's a tough roll right there for the Colts.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of the shortest time period I can recall for a foot surgery. I can't think of anyone being out less than 6 weeks, right? 6-8 weeks, something like that.
Yeah.
And even then, the foot stuff can be real dicey. But that's where it's also how long are they gonna have him rest and wait it out now versus if it's not season ending versus just doing yeah. the best and hope it. But to your point there, then you go back to what you just said. I mean, early in the season, if it's possible to get it fixed without the surgery, you need a really good quarterback. You need Wentz to be good Wentz.
Yeah.
Not just Wentz on the field, but good Wentz to win enough of those games. So it's quite a dilemma for them. I'm also very disappointed that Steven chose Gardner Minshew over Marcus Mariota.
Hey. Loved every second of it. Steven is on my team. Minshew mania, baby.
But come on, if you had a choice, though.
I'm going Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, but I'm saying right now you have a choice for us to have something to watch. You're clearly picking Mariota.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. But selfishly, if I'm picking the quarterback, if I'm Chris Ballard.
If you're Ballard.
I'm going Minshew.
Yeah.
But for us to talk about, yeah, get Mariota in there.
I hear what he's saying about the Minshew being reliable, but he's also a little bit of a freelancer that does some wacky stuff too, isn't he?
I mean, yeah, but it's magic out there watching him do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Mariota did a couple things. I know you don't think he completed a pass in his career, but just saying. In that offense.
I mean, Minshew could throw an out route, so that's a good start.
Oh, boy. Marcus Mariota's 19% career completion percentage, QB rating of 7.8 yes. per Robbie.
Love you, Marcus. Again, a great person. Really enjoyed dealing with him.
By the way, so let's go back real quick to last week. I heard on Darren Donk and Chase, they're talking about Mariota and the fans.
Yeah.
And Chase was saying, the Titans fans were with him all along.
There's a lot that were.
Well, there's a lot who were, but there are a lot who weren't.
Yeah.
And Chase was saying, all the way to the end, the fans were with him.
There are some that still love him to death.
Sure. But, it was a huge argument in town for years. I mean, the full-on, absolute Marcus fandom, that ended, really, I think it ended in 17.
Yeah.
The very inconsistent performance. Then he wins the playoff game. Then he goes back and forth. Then all the injuries. But unless I heard Chase wrong, I think there were a lot of people in this town, including you and many others, who were totally out on him. You were first.
You were the first. I was first.
Well, you end up being right.
Thank you. Wish him well, though.
Yeah. Hopefully we see him in Indy.
Absolutely. When we come back, we'll be joined by Gentry Estes from the Tennessee, and we'll get into the Titans with him. Also hit the Kumar Rocker stuff as well. So crazy story between the New York Mets and Kumar Rocker over the weekend. We'll get into all that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.